Latest. I'm Simon English.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Making a Researcher. For today, we have a, shall we call fourth year? But you just submitted,
right.
We have a fourth year researcher from the Department of Language and Related Science.
No, it's the Language and Linguistics Science.
Language and Linguistics. And she's going to share her research on...
My research is entitled A Multimodal Analysis of Assessment Sequences in Chilean-Spanish Interaction.
Okay, and her name is Veronica. Welcome.
Thank you.
And how is, retirement fitting you? when you submit the thesis, it does feel like you are retired.
I submitted 2 weeks ago. And
what did you do? Okay, describe the whole day to me. Were you actually writing the day before?
Yeah.
You were actually?
I was compiling my references that morning. So it's really, really awful. But, and I didn't sleep.
Everybody does
for a good
that.
28 hours.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah, pulling an all-nighter. And then... And then I submitted, but like I met my friends here, so they all went with me.
so you ganged up and went to the show?
Yeah, we went together. That's with my family, brilliant. My friends. And
did they carry champagne and all the flagships? And
chocolate, but in cards. So it was really nice.
Where did you turn it in?
In the student hub.
Right.
And they said they'd never seen anyone getting like there with such a, you know, like supporting committee.
Everybody just coming in cheerful. It's like a hen party when you see people walking around. Was it like 10 o'clock in the morning or no?
No, it was actually, the deadline was 5 p.m. So I submitted at 3 p.m.
Did you submit on, is that like a Monday or something?
It was actually a Tuesday, Halloween.
Oh,
and I was
brilliant.
Having a party afterwards.
That's just
in my house.
Gosh.
So
so you didn't sleep for
I slept 2 hours and then I hosted a party. So.
That's really, for anyone who's listening, that's not the norm. That's not the norm for PhD submitting. I think, I don't know, probably army is not the norm. Anyway, you submitted and that's Halloween and that's it.
That's
is that the fourth year? The end of fourth year.
Yeah, it's I did have an extension for a month. It was not the end of September.
Probably need to ask for tips on that as well.
Yeah.
How to get extensions. Yeah. Very practical.
Disclosing lots of information.
I know. Yeah. I can't do this. Did you ever doubt yourself when you're writing up? It's just like, I can't find so many words to write.
Yeah. I think that was the most difficult part. Like my analytic chapters were essentially done. But it's just all the rest, you know, where you have to essentially sell it. And
honestly,
that was the hardest part.
And it takes a really long time to adjust the fonts, to do the references, to line everything up, to make the, what's it called, the content page. That takes forever.
Actually, the content page was not too hard because I was working with Pages on the Mac.
I see. So
that's
it's automatically,
But it's the only thing that's self-generated. Oh. So
I hope the whole thesis self-generated.
Yeah.
They really should come up with those things that you talk, then they type it down for you.
Yeah.
Probably an electronic secretary that does this for you.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yeah. And right? You see, I had like all these transcripts because I work with natural data.
Yes.
So I had transcripts of the verbal part, but also the non-verbal part.
Mm-hmm.
So like. Yeah, like many times I love the alignment of that.
How do you transcribe non-verbal parts?
There are several systems. I use one by this Swiss author, and it essentially aligns with the text. I mean, with the verbal.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you use a number of signs like the star sign or the pound sign or whatever. To align different types of nonverbal behavior with what is going on as they speak.
Uh-huh.
You know, so
that's
it's
interesting.
Many tiers. And also I was working with Chilean Spanish because I'm Chilean, so
Yes. You brought it up. There we go. So you are Chilean.
Yes.
I think I haven't met ever a Chilean before in my life.
Really?
You're the first one.
There are many of us now here.
Really?
So, yeah.
Any traits? How can I identify them?
Well, physically, it's hard to tell because we're very mixed. But bubbly and loud and
please circulate this show to all of your friends, and so I can get more guests on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, so Oh, wow. That sounds just amazing. So you traveled all the way from Chile to study here for your master's, you said?
For my master's in 2012, I came to do a master's in phonetics and phonology. And I was very interested in sociophonetics at the time, but then I ended up discovering conversation analysis and interactional linguistics. So then I decided to do my PhD here as well. And I was lucky to get first a scholarship for the master's from Chile, and then another one from Chile as well to do my PhD.
Smashing. Yeah. And you are married.
I'm married.
With a kid.
I have a 12-year-old.
Who is in?
In secondary school now. So she's
here.
She's here. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. How does she like it?
I think she likes it better than, I mean, this is pretty much everything she knows at this point.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
she was seven when she came.
Yes.
So, she has very little, I mean, very few memories of from before that time. Mm-hmm. And her English is, of course, better than her Spanish, although we do speak Spanish all the time at home. But it's also like code switching all the time.
I know, that's not confusing at all. No. It's just natural process.
Yeah.
I know, right.
Yeah, so she likes it a lot here. All of her friends are here.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh, and Christmas is close.
Christmas is close.
I know. The lights switch on tomorrow night. No,
it's Thursday. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I go every year. I love it. Christmas is my favorite season of the year. You know.
So if it's in Chile, you have Christmas in the summer.
In the summer, we like fake snow and all.
That's just natural. Very, very natural.
But you know what's nice? Because generally, like...
It's warm.
Yeah, although some people do have turkey, most of the times we would just have a barbecue outside because it's...
Yeah,
it's just so nice.
Do your Santa Claus wear shorts instead of a full-on?
No.
Oh my God, no, bless
poor
them.
Them. Yeah,
I know. So they are literally sweating like Right. So back on to your research. You are working with conversation analysis, and you said you're building a multi.
It's a multimodal analysis because I'm not only looking at the verbal behavior, but also at the nonverbal.
Right.
So
where did that come from?
It came from my data, essentially. So what I wanted to look at originally, and that's why I went to Chile to record my data, I recorded people, pairs of friends or couples in Chile eating British products, like Marmite and...
Oh, my God, you did Marmite.
Yeah, I did Marmite.
How many of them liked it?
Most people like it, I should say.
Really?
But it was this discovery in their mouth. You know, it's one of these foods that kind of develops in your mouth.
Okay.
So it was...
I hated it.
It was a process of liking it and then, what's happening now?
It's so complicated, isn't it?
It is. Right. So that's one of the foods. And I had like baked beans and mushy peas and Terry's chocolate orange.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
So
try chocolate pudding. Chocolate pudding?
No, no, orange, the orange, you know, the Terry's orange.
Okay.
So, I had them eating those products because I wanted to look at how they assess these foods, you know, like I wanted to generate these pairs of assessments where someone said, oh, this is really nice. Oh, yes, it really is, you know.
Yes.
I wanted to look at the alignment and how that was expressed through prosody, for example, matching prosody, things like that. And then I realized that the faces and what they were doing, you know,
you have to be included,
withholding their tasting, and the other one was looking at the other to see whether they liked it or not, you know.
Oh, so it's a panel.
It's two people sitting together, with the food in front of them. So that became just much more interesting, and I thought, this is what I'm going to start looking at. And I started looking at how these assessments came to be, how they originated in the conversation, and who said what first, you know, who had tasted the food first, and and how they negotiated whether they like these things or not, you know, pretty much that.
Does one like food tasting usually take? Like Marmite, when you offered them?
I mean, I essentially gave them five foods and I gave them 20 minutes and I said...
That's a lot of words.
Oh, it's a lot of words.
Especially when it comes to food. Some people... I can talk
a lot. But they were actually tasting as well.
Ah, right.
So, you know, there's the actual eating of it.
So
which is also very interesting in terms of multimodality because you have competing activities of talking and eating and that require a certain time and the handling of objects as well. So,
yes.
It is how like we deal with talk every day, you know? So it's
daily life.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
and it can be also be perceived from a social linguistic perspective, I suppose.
It can, but conversation analysis actually does not.
No.
Consider,
it's just
conversation. Yeah, whether you are young or old or.
Is that the discourse analysis that takes into account those two factors?
All those varieties and power relations and all sorts of
things. Bless
those, them. Yeah, yeah.
Bless them.
Yeah, so anybody we just look at conversation in terms of actions.
Yes.
So people are doing things. Mm-hmm. And we base our analysis on the orientations that participants show right there. Wow. So anything that we can. Essentially evidence from the talk itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
What did you find?
I found
anything unexpected when you just look at it and thought, oh gosh.
Yeah, I mean, I found that eye gaze is used to mobilize a first assessment, for example.
Uh-huh.
Right? So
yes.
It's very interesting from a sociological point of view to see why what's at stake when you need to produce an assessment of something that you have never tried before.
Right.
So, you know, there shouldn't be anything at stake if you think about it, because it's new for both of us.
Yes.
You know, it's different from, I don't know, there are certain foods, for example, in objects in general, to which we attach a certain value, like champagne, say, caviar, things like that. And it's kind of like a thing that you have to like those things.
Yes.
Be posh, nice, you know? But
no pressure. No pressure.
Yeah.
We like champagne.
Yeah, but so then these were things that they had not tried, so essentially nothing would be at stake.
Ah.
But it turned out that sometimes people they gaze at the other and they withhold the tasting and their assessments so the other one goes first.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting because
it's cultural.
It's not cultural, it's social. I think it's just given by the context, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like
do they know each other, those two participants?
Yeah.
Ah, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, there were people who knew one another. Uh-huh. So of course there are things that you could say. For example, one of my couples, one is a chef and his girlfriend is not. So then she does a lot of these, she produces all these orientations to his epistemic primacy. Mm-hmm. So she says things like, boss, you know better, you know?
Yes.
Things like that.
So well,
how do you say this in chefy terms? So all those things. So it's very interesting how they negotiate, you know, with their likings and also how they orient to this being a task in a way, so they need to finish eating one of the foods and then move on to the other, and then you know, and that's also the way our interactions work.
Yes,
all the time.
Well,
so we're
basis,
closing topics and moving on to new ones, and and all those transitions are very organized, you know, and that's what's cross cultural essentially.
Yes,
it's just that there's a lot of organization in the way we talk and communicate. So
hang on, are they speaking
Spanish?
Ah, right.
Yeah.
They're speaking Spanish. Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Chilean Spanish.
Ah, do you think the same? Do you think it will be the same for speaking a second language? Hypothesize.
I think it would be. I think. It has to, as I said before, it has to do more with the actions, not really with the language.
No.
So. Yeah, I mean,
you'd imagine the actions are the same, regardless of the language.
Regardless, right? So, So if you're assessing something, and then you need to come with a second assessment of it, and if you, for example, do not have access to the same taste, for example, that happens with, for example, when one of them has the taste of the food they tried before in their mouth, so it lingers, and then one of them makes an assessment and the other one is like, you know what, I can't really say anything.
No.
At this point, I still have the taste
the
of this
Marmite.
Racist. Or the Marmite, you know?
Yeah, because the Marmite
anything
is too
that is strong, pungent
exactly.
And stronger.
It's like tasting coriander. Everything you taste afterwards is coriander.
Exactly. Or garlic, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. But garlic, I think garlic is sort of comfortably overwhelming because it's quite salty and subtle in a way. Otherwise, like, coriander is very in your face. Yeah, like, yeah. I am coriander. Everybody come and applaud me.
We love coriander in Chile. It's like one of the things that you would put any, I mean, on.
Is that, I think yeah, it's
soups or salads or anything, really.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
All right. So is that a very niche field that you are working on?
Yeah. In general, we would try to work with very natural data. Mm. So, the best thing you can do is just interrupt people in the middle of a conversation and say, "Can I record you?"
Yes.
Like, and just place the microphones and,
yes.
and get that, or record them and then sort of ask them for
consent for later. Consent yeah, exactly. Afterwards. Sorry, I've got a paper coming out, and I think I recorded about 35 seconds of your life.
Yeah.
Can I use that, please? Yeah.
Yeah, but that also has these ethical issues and everything. So, I try to do something. And also because I was working I work with prosody, in the interface of linguistics and conversation analysis, I work with prosody a lot, and I wanted to have really like good quality data I could work with. So I kind of compromised a little bit and I said, okay, I'm just gonna ask these friends who were going over to my house anyways to try these foods and.
And see what happens.
Yeah, see what happens. But it's and it's also with food, but it's also because I wanted sort of like the interaction with things and the environment. It can get more natural than that, but
then you have
future
the
projects
ethics, definitely. Start recording.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah, but the conversation analysis does work with all sorts of talk, so it could be natural conversation in the street, or it could be institutional talk.
TV.
So it could be people watching TV, for
exactly.
example.
Do you know there is a
Bottle
show?
Box.
Exactly.
I love it.
You've seen.
Yeah.
So it's literally watching people watching TV.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I know. Is that still on?
But it's edited. Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's still on. And they have grown there in that show, those people. Like, some of them were children and now they're adults. It's so weird.
Okay.
But, that's edited for me. It's like, I could get the raw data. It would be amazing.
I know.
But...
but then
yeah.
because they're on the show, do they tend to change their behavior for the sake of they are on a TV show? So
I would say that it does happen. Like, there are orientations to the camera and to being on a show.
That's just natural.
Most of the time I think people forget about it and they just
if they actually record you for 24 hours you get bored of it and you really don't understand what is going on. Google Box, I've never seen it. I've heard about it.
You should watch it, it's amazing. I record it when I can't watch it, it's so good. And they had the celebrity Google Box the other day with Jeremy Corbyn and Ed Sheeran and the Osbournes.
Are they watching
Things
together?
Yeah, I mean, not together.
No.
In couples or...
and Ed Sheeran watching a TV together. That would be nice.
Ed Sheeran was with his mates and Jeremy Corbyn was with an actress or something. But they were like in their own houses and they were watching the same show. That's the thing.
What was the show?
It could be many. It's many shows, actually. But one of them they showed the other day was Blue Planet 2.
Oh, yes.
That's one of the things that they were watching, or like some pieces of news that have been important during the week. So
Jeremy himself.
Yeah.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah, and University Challenge was one of the other ones. So it's like everyone feeling dumb because they cannot really answer any of the questions.
I can't answer any of the questions.
No, I can't either.
Sometimes I thought I know the answer, then I say the wrong thing, which is even more awkward.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I know this. They go, that's not right.
Yeah
I know, right? Google Box, I'm going to try that. And so you did your master's, you did your PhD, and you are now
teaching in Leeds. So I'm teaching this module called Interactional Linguistics, which is amazing because it's like essentially what I do. Minus the multimodal part. It only gets to audio, but that's good. Working with undergrads and lots of Erasmus students and telling them about this fascinating thing that is conversation analysis, so they can learn more and
inspire more
they
people.
They do their own recordings there, so it's really nice. They get people go into a studio and record them, and then they start analyzing things. So it's really fascinating. I think they're very excited. Yes. And I'm very excited to be teaching as well. I mean, teaching I used to teach before in Chile, so at university as well. But yeah, but now it's like I'm teaching the thing that I like, you know? Like
before you were not.
No, I mean, I was teaching English, which is okay, but...
Yeah, there's a huge difference.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
But then again, if you're teaching English, I suppose you can get a lot of data as well during the speaking sessions, record them.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also like... there's this this side of me that has developed into a linguist that has a different view of linguistics now, you know?
Were you a linguist by training?
I did my undergrad in English linguistics and literature, and then I did my master's in phonetics, so but now I've moved more into the interaction and linguistic side, so that means studying language as it is in real interaction, and that has its clashes with more traditional views of, you know, how language is taught, for example, these days. So it's like these canonical or like very rigid structures and things that maybe in real life it's not so much like that, you know.
No, you do get questioned when you are working with very, let's say, sort of traditional more theoretical side of the linguistics, especially when people ask you what's the impact and how does that transform our life? I'm like, it doesn't. And it's an awkward topic during Christmas dinner as well. Everybody tries to ask you, like, what do you do? I'm like, PhD.
Yeah, and you see like how everybody has these very strict opinions about the language and like what language should be like, and you know what's right and wrong.
Yeah,
and then you're like, everything is right.
Exactly,
everything is right. Why are you being so prescriptive? Like
exactly, and the whole purpose of it for learning language or teaching language, from a pedagogical point of view, it's to communicate.
Yeah,
exactly. So it shouldn't just be on the books by the rules. It should be how it reflects the way people think, the way people communicate and interact, and cross-cultural as well.
Absolutely. So they should lay back a little bit.
I know. Don't be so rigid. I know. Please listen to us. We have brilliant ideas. So how's what's it like so you have you're married with a child, and your daughter is here with you during your whole PhD and master's program. What's it like?
I think it's been really good on the side of things where I could spend a lot more time with her, because before that I was back home in Chile working all the time,
right,
working long hours, and I barely saw her, I have to say. And my husband was like living very far away because he was working in a different city and all. So like being the three of us together here has meant, you know, like...
Oh, your husband is here as well?
Yeah, we're all together.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's been like we built our life here now.
Mm-hmm.
And we enjoy a lot of things that we didn't before, like going out in nature and like, you know, like
hiking,
traveling a lot, that's life now. So it's also very interesting now that my daughter is becoming she's been a teenager for some time now, although she's 12, but she's taller than I am, and she does my makeup and everything because she's like so good at it.
That's cool.
And we're really like good
mates
at this point.
That's very
and
cool.
We enjoy like some of the same music as well, so we go to gigs together and
it's really
cool. Arcade Fire, like that's the band that we love together.
Ooh,
so
cool.
It's
right.
I have a really cool daughter.
I know. Is she interested in linguistics?
She says I think it was last year that she said she wanted to study ontology.
Sorry.
Yeah. And I'm like, odontology? What? And she's like, no. It's like the study of existence, you know? And I was like, oh, yeah, but maybe go for philosophy, but ontology, I don't think it's a degree.
I don't even understand that word. Like,
I think she read it somewhere.
It's a cool word. It's,
yeah, and it's, yeah, she's very interested in anything psychological and social as well. So
psychology always attracts a lot of people.
I think so.
A lot of younger generation, they feel, oh, we read mind. Yeah. I'm like, no, most of the time you don't read minds, but
but it's been really cool to me, like, to see how she's become this person, very complex person who, you know, the other day I said I wanted to dress up as Katrina for Halloween, right?
And she says, your thesis.
And she says, like, that's cultural appropriation. And I'm like, but I'm Latina. And she said, but you're not Mexican. Okay.
But I'm let's say you can't. Be Tom from Tom and Jerry. That's culturally appropriate, I suppose. Yeah, I know. So, just go for animals. Yeah.
Anything that doesn't do anything to anyone, I suppose. But
be a burger. Everybody likes you. Yeah. That's unexpected from a 12-year-old.
Yeah, but that's the way they are these days. So
they
it's really
so
nice.
So much complicated than we would imagine. I can't even remember what I was like when I was 12.
I think I was still playing with dolls.
I think I was less complicated. Much less. Well, clearly I won't know what Katrina as culturally appropriation. I have no idea. Or what's that word again?
Ontology.
Yeah, exactly. I would never know that word when I was 12. Even in my first language, I have no idea. Yeah. I know, right? Yeah. So circling back to the PhD. So you've completed all your research and you just write it up everything. So how's the writing up? How was the writing up?
It was hard. It took me longer than I thought.
When exactly did you start writing? Is it at the beginning of the fourth year or?
I think I began at the beginning of the fourth year.
So about a year ago.
About a year ago.
Right now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And every analytic chapter took me probably 3 months at least.
Are you one of those perfectionists?
I think my supervisors are. I have two supervisors.
I think they all are.
Yeah.
Have you met anyone who's just like, whatever?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And having two supervisors as well. So because I'm doing this program that is not linguistics per se, it's called a PhD in language and communication.
Right.
So it's between linguistics and sociology.
Yes.
So one of my supervisors is a phonetician from linguistics and the other one is a psychologist from sociology. So they have very different backgrounds, but at the same time, both of them know about conversational analysis.
Are they friends?
So they're really good friends, and they're very nice people, both of them.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So it's been amazing to have them. I mean,
how did you find them, by the way?
Because I did my master's with him as well, with a supervisor from linguistics, Richard Ogden, and then, we needed to decide who was going to be, my second supervisor for this program. And, so he suggested Maren Terrine from sociology. And she's amazing. She's just, I don't know, I love them. They're so clever. And
I know, that's one of the things that scares me. Like, because I often ask people working for their PhD, do you want to be academia in the future? And many of them say yes. And for me, I'm more scared of how am I going to ever supervise someone as a PhD? I can't do what they do at the moment.
At the moment.
It's a big challenge, isn't it?
And the thing is, I'm not too young myself. So that's also, but still I'm very junior in academia because I began my PhD when I was about 30. So it's like I'm 35 now. It's really scary. I don't know if I'll ever get to that point. Like, I need to publish.
We probably need to get some supervisors to hear to share whether they have doubts about their own suggestions. Sometimes probably they'll be like, I don't really know why I said that, but I just said it.
I think we will manage, but
let's get our hopes up. Why not? It's almost Christmas, so it's one of those seasons that we feel very hopeful and
push anything and everything.
Exactly. I can do this. Right. So you started writing about a year ago now, and each analytical chapter took you about 3 months.
Yeah.
Okay. And you said your two supervisors are quite perfectionist. Do you think it's a good thing to be?
I think it's a good thing. It was a little bit sort of, yeah, scary when at the end of it, when we're reading a draft of the whole thing, they would still be sort of making comments about parts that supposedly were at their best.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, you're still finding things. But
I know, just shut up.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be a good thing eventually because...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also their prestation, like...
No, it can't really beat them. No, yeah, exactly.
Point, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah. But I'm happy to please them as well, but it's also a challenge for myself, like, that I have to do a really good job.
Yeah.
You know?
So, do you like writing up?
No. No,
I don't. Do you prefer coding?
It's not coding what I do. I mean, I did do coding of things. Which was the easiest part, which is...
The non-verbal one.
Yeah, the non-verbal, the prosody, all of it is just like working with software and like it's nice and filling in tables and stuff. And doing all these descriptive statistics. And but I do analysis of like, conversation analysis on pieces of data.
Yes.
And we build collections. That's the whole point.
Uh-huh.
And we also look at deviant cases that do not fit this collection.
Uh-huh.
I mean, these collections, but also inform us of
yes.
Of and actually help you sort of back up, you know, why you have this collection. So it's
you enjoy those?
I do. Putting everything together and making it, as I was telling you before,
argument.
Yeah, it's just putting everything together and making everything coherent is just what is very tiring. And it's,
I know.
The thesis becomes this really, really massive thing that it's just, you think about it all the time. You can't stop thinking about it.
No, you can't.
And yeah. And
I know.
And then as you're reading, like, you cannot read the whole thing, you know, at one sitting. It's just too much.
Exactly. I know. I'm like, it's going to be about 300 pages. Who is going to read that?
Yeah.
I feel so bad for the external examiner.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, and you're going to find mistakes and typos and lots of things that don't make sense probably. But you have to let go at some point and see what...
Kind of move on.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm in that stage now. I've passed the point of nightmares because I was having nightmares about the thesis after I submitted. Like,
Really?
Yeah, I was closing my eyes and I saw pages, you know, like sort of parts of my thesis were like in front of my eyes.
And God. Yeah.
It has to stop.
Yeah,
hallucinating. It has to go away.
I know.
Yeah.
Normal people don't hallucinate about their thesis, to be honest. Not like, on page 27, I've got this word wrong. What does this mean? No idea. Yeah. I can't even remember I wrote this.
Yeah, but it's really tragic that so many people have mental
Did you have issues. Any breakdown?
I did.
Yeah,
I
of course.
Yeah.
I think all of us.
Yeah.
Did have done or will do at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the second year was very. Was it the second year? Yeah.
Mine's the second year.
Yeah.
Because around the confirmation.
Is it the
upgrading the, or whatever that is called?
The Valley of Shit or something like that. They call it. It's
Yeah, it's like when. It's like when you have a heart attack, it goes beep, beep. Then it's one of those times when you start doubting sort of everything.
So, well, in certain respects, I did things really well. Like, I presented as much as I could, you know, like, I don't know, maybe 10, 11 conferences in my 4 years. So, I'm really...
Glad you're funded. They're very expensive.
They were not funded. The
Are they
conferences.
Not?
No. I mean, the department gives you some money, but it's not. It's
I think
it's
for your department, it's less than £300.
It's £150.
I thought, wow, yeah, social sciences.
Is it okay that I'm saying that?
I know.
I think it's getting better, though.
I know for electronics, they're like £1,500.
I know for economics as well.
Well, really, you should.
Yeah.
I know, like, talk to them. I know, be friends with
social
them.
Social sciences, humanities. But, well.
I know.
I did get some funding from other places. Yeah. I went to a visiting fellowship as well to Finland a couple of years ago for
What's
a month.
What's Finland like?
Well, amazing. It was cold. It was February.
Is it much colder than here? Much colder.
Much colder. Minus 15.
And
I don't
it's
know.
Much less populated, I heard.
It's so cold all the time.
That's why they are much less populated. Because you can't find them. It's not that they do not exist. It's just they are indoors or underground. Exactly.
But it was amazing to see all these white. I mean, the sea was frozen. Like,
oh my God, really?
Yes. It's stunning. So, I went there with my husband and my daughter. So that's really
that's
cool.
That's okay.
Yeah,
yes, exactly.
And for a month.
If it's just one person, you really get depressed, I suppose.
Oh, I would have been. Yeah.
I know.
But I had a wonderful office with two computers and two screens.
That's the key. Oh. You need two screens, honestly. Yeah. I think two screens are the key to everything if you are actually working with data analysis and et cetera.
Yeah, and working with some of the best people in the field. So that was really, really cool.
Was that research placement or?
Yeah, it was a visiting fellowship, and it was funded by this institution, CIMO, Frolic for Mobility in Finland.
We like them.
Yeah, we like them.
We're best friends now.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think it was a European Union thing now. We can't do it anymore.
Damn.
Oh, well.
Oh, wow. Exactly. That was about 2 years ago?
It was 2014, 15 probably. Oh my God, I don't remember anymore.
So that's the highlight of your PhD journey?
2015 it was. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So
yeah, it was that was a really good point. After that, everything started like, then it became better and then.
Exactly. It's like,
I went through stages and
ups and downs.
And life, you know, life happens. And
I think you just have to soldier through.
Yeah.
You kind of have to push yourself because, especially when you're at the end of the second year or the end of the third year, it's just. One more year.
Yeah, and exactly. There's a lot, you know, like at stake for everyone.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
For me, it was like, I'm on a scholarship from the Chilean government. I have to do this right.
Yes, exactly.
Otherwise, I have to pay, like, I don't know, a lot of money if I don't manage.
End up in prison.
Yeah, end up in prison.
Yeah, exactly.
Or just, you know, like, so fleeing the country. Or yeah, I have to respond to some people, but also, like, exactly. My family. That this is something
you're
that
the
I've...
You're the role motto of your
daughter. And I've done this so... So we have a better life as well.
Exactly.
You know? Because I enjoy it. So actually,
and
I have to enjoy
and
it.
To push the boundary of human knowledge onto the next level.
Absolutely.
That's like the end of the acknowledgement. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Yeah. My supervisor, one of them, always tells me that I don't sell myself enough. Like, I mean... That I've done so much more than I'm claiming there.
No, I'm not confident. Like, especially when you go to conferences and you meet a lot of your reference, right?
Yeah.
Some of them, I met some of my reference that I was not even aware that they were alive. Sorry. But when, because when you look at them, you think, wow, they are so famous. They must be, well, gone to a better place. Then you saw them in your audience when you're presenting and you thought, oh, he looks a lot like the person I Googled yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was like, probably he's the person that I referenced. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's very, it makes you quite humble in a way as well.
Yeah, yeah. But it's even exciting. Like, for my supervisor is like, he's a well-known person in his field.
Uh-huh.
But still, like when we did this paper together a couple of years ago and presented that at IPRA, this pragmatics conference in Belgium. And... He texted me, did you see Steven Levinson was in the audience? And I'm like,
yeah.
I know. So even like for
Star
him, it was
struck.
It was exciting even for him. So
I know.
Yeah.
I suppose that's one of the best things doing a PhD or becoming involved in academia. You meet a lot of
pioneers. I'm really good at networking. I've organized things. Like, I'm the queen of doing that.
That's the fun part.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
That's like a thousand times much more fun than writing up and locked in your office.
But at some point you believe that you're gonna get away with it.
No, exactly.
With doing
exactly.
that only.
When you're organizing like activities, you think this is working.
Yeah. You can see my CV, it's amazing. But still, like, the thesis needs to be written. So yeah.
I know. Sometimes we should I would suggest that we include CV at the end of the page.
Absolutely.
I know. Or at the beginning of the thesis. Yeah. So just impress them. don't read too carefully into the thesis. I don't like writing, sorry.
Yeah. Right? But now, like, talking about CVs, it's finding a job is still hard.
I know. Yeah, but you've got a job now. But
I've got a job, but it's only one module.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what's going to happen next.
How did you get the job, if you don't mind?
No, So, as it's a very specific course.
Yes.
The person who was teaching it, Linder Plager, he's the head of phonetics in Leeds.
Uh-huh.
He started looking for someone first within the White Rose.
Yes, definitely.
Right.
Well,
so
buddies.
My supervisor was his supervisor.
Ooh,
at some point. So
okay.
My supervisor recommended me. And I got it. So that's it was one of those things. Like, but it's also because it's only one module, and
yes.
it's a very required like expertise for that. So.
Uh-huh. Did you travel every day? Do you need to travel?
I do. I go twice a week.
Oh, that's fine then.
Tickets are fairly cheap, so it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's not technically
except
going to
when
Glasgow.
I'm late. And take an Uber, but well,
is that because you take an Uber then you become late, or is that because you're late then you take an Uber?
I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
You need to look into that. How do you like Leeds?
I like it a lot.
It's very convenient for life.
Yeah,
you can find everything.
Apparently, it's a lot cheaper than here as well.
Oh my god, yeah. Have you seen the rents?
I haven't, but I've heard. So
yeah, it's shocking. Like. We're buddies, please.
Oh yeah.
Make some sense out of the
hours. Apparently York is very expensive, but you can't get used to it.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't know. Yeah. Well, Cambridge and Oxford are super expensive as well.
Oh yeah.
No, never going there.
Yeah. Even if I have a friend in Oxford and
probably can't afford it. So
yeah.
Oh wow. So you're looking forward to becoming academia?
Yeah, so either getting a job in something that I enjoy, but at this point I'm willing to do anything.
Exactly,
and
that's what I say.
And
like when you go to job websites and they ask you to like click on your preferences,
I'm getting emails every Sunday about education and linguistics.
And I read those very seriously. I think that's one of those like most serious emails I read. Yesterday
every
I found
morning,
it,
like,
I know. Yesterday I found a post in Cairo. I was like, that's my field, but they are looking for assistant professor. Probably not now.
Yeah.
But it's in Cairo. I don't mind there. That sounds fun. I know.
Yeah. So I've been also looking at some places in Asia. Like
come, please. Okay. I know. Yeah, sounds fun. It's hot.
Yeah.
It's warm. It's exotic. It's a job. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So or a postdoc, that would be fantastic as well.
It's
because
very
I do enjoy doing research. So it's very competitive.
And it's really niche. Like
sometimes you feel like you have everything for the post. You know, like for the position. It's like and you see it and you say like, oh, I know that software and I do this. Oh yeah. And then you apply. It's like you didn't even get an interview. It's like what happened?
I know.
So it's
how many of us are there? I know.
Yeah. So you just have to wait and see.
I know.
Yeah, but it will happen eventually.
If you can't be in academia, what would you do? Or has being in academia, like being a researcher, always the goal?
I mean, I think it's. I don't think I have to think about it too much. It's just the matter of. There's this choice that I'm making now in staying here a little bit longer because my husband is accepted for this master's in Leeds and in geography, he does geography. And so we're also like not in a good, place to go back home and then back again, you know? So it doesn't make sense. So
no. And your daughter's here.
Yeah, my daughter's here. And I, of course, like that's, very important thing. Like we want to stay for her so she can finish.
Yeah.
Or like get as far as she can and with her studies.
If she has all her friends here, then it's such a pain.
She's thinking about getting emancipated. Is it like maybe 3 years more? Is it when you're 16, right?
I think so, yeah. Oh, gosh.
Goodness.
I know.
And but there's, of course, I'm on a scholarship from the Chilean government. That means I have to go back at some point. I have like 4 years grace period. So I can go back after, I would have to go back after that, unless I get a postdoc.
You've sold your soul.
I've sold my soul.
For funding.
But it's actually, it actually makes sense, you know, it's, they're paying for everything and now I have to go back and work there. And they don't ask you to work in a certain university or anything, it's just be there in the country and work there.
It makes total sense, I think.
Yeah. But it's also, my area of study, it doesn't exist there.
Oh, does it not?
No.
Did they
I
know?
Think I am the Did first conversation analyst, like Chilean conversation analyst.
In your country?
Period.
Oh my God. So, I don't know, in years to come, there will be PhD students from your country and looking at you. I think, oh, that's Veronica.
For sure. I mean, they
and
are
messaging
now.
Their friends. That's Veronica. Yeah. She's in the audience.
Yeah, we do have actually this project with a Peruvian friend who's studying in UCLA and some other people. And it's a conversation analysis in Latin America. So we are putting like all of our names and papers and everything together, so we have and to start translating the terminology. And you know,
I suppose we can probably use, I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud now, we can use conversational analysis to use it in assessment field, like you analyze, like you say, the conversations in natural
it's
conversations.
Used in classroom interaction for classroom interactions there's a lot of literature of conversational analytic literature on classroom interactions and all sorts of things.
Exactly.
So probably assessments as well,
because the big thing of assessment is authenticity. You want to assess them in the authentic context so that they can produce language that they will actually use in the future, especially for higher level learners. Then it can be a very good thing.
Yeah.
That's very
probably.
Interesting. I know.
Yeah.
Let's see how that works.
Yeah, let's
see
how
we
that
find
works.
Any funding.
So, yeah.
At all.
So essentially what I was telling you is like I can... I will have to go back home someday, and I have that challenge there of, well, first getting a job, and to try to establish conversational analysis as a field of study. There's multiple niches, I think, like in linguistics, but also in sociology.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yeah, the
areas,
person who
so.
Brings everything together now.
Yeah, I
Hopefully.
Can do. I can do that.
I know.
You can organize research methods and
organize events.
Yeah.
Clearly, you're very good
at
it. Exactly. That sounds fun.
Yeah. So I'm gonna try to. Yeah, like, but it's that first step, you know. Of, well, it's gonna take some time for me to actually get a job where I have that sort of power to start.
Oh yeah.
Implementing courses.
Yes.
And stuff. So, that's a challenge for back home.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, I want to do as much as I can and probably keep doing research, because I don't know if I can stop now, you know, after
well,
like
if
all 4
you
years.
Have nightmares about your thesis, I don't think you are savable anymore. You are gone.
Yeah.
This
is kind of like my religion now.
I
have to do it.
It's a devoted relationship if you're doing a PhD, to be honest. Do you, anything in particular that you think doing a PhD has helped you in a way that other things probably won't? For example, do you become a better, well, you are natural talk public engagement person, I
suppose. That's not something the PhD really did a lot for, because I was already
Chilean.
Good at that.
Exactly.
And I think I've become smarter. Certainly. Like
that's by default. Yeah.
Just more knowledgeable about things.
Exactly.
You know,
I'm
more critical.
Yeah.
That's one big thing. Probably before my PhD, I was kind of those persons who just put things together. You know, this is my literature review, whatever. Or like,
exactly.
Or this is my study.
I know. Do you think when people read our paper, they think that as well? Oh, they're just putting this together.
Yeah. Hopefully not.
No.
But but now I can be very critical of anything that I read, you know, or
Yeah, academically more confident as well. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly.
I think if you are reading the same article from a very esteemed journal, the first time you read it, probably in your first year, and the time that you read it now, it's completely different. That it changes your perspective. And
that happens when, like, if you start writing pieces of, like, of your literature review, for example, or anything, like in your first year, for example, and then in my fourth year, like, I'm taking that and trying to include it, and I'm like, that's rubbish.
Exactly. Like, nobody used the things they wrote in your first year. I don't even understand the point why we were asked to write so much. I'm like, they're completely... In my first year, I remembered I was literally just reporting what others have done instead of actually analysing and discussing them.
Yeah, I didn't have to do that too much because... Yeah, conversationalists work in a different way. So yes, we get our data and then we look at our data multiple times. Mm. And then we start looking for patterns and things. And so essentially, like, the background comes afterwards. But
is that like an inductive process?
Yeah. So, but at the same time, you were kind of trying to, and of course, you were asked to do, for example, like this confirmation paper at some point, right?
Exactly.
And
although, if that's the way you work, how are you going to write something for your first year?
But I did manage to write something for my first year, and we do have our confirmation like after 12 months only. In linguistics, so
I did. Oh yeah, you guys work different, much faster than
But it went really well, actually. So it was unanimously upgraded.
Who was your temp member, by the way?
My temp member was Beatrice Shepherd Reed.
Right.
So she was the head of department in education.
Yes.
She went to King's College.
Yeah, exactly.
So she left
I was just
me.
About to say, and
so I don't. I do have another internal now. She's Claire Jackson. She's from sociology.
I see.
But Beatrice was along
she's
the.
Lovely. Yeah.
She's really good.
But she left us. So.
Yeah, she did.
I know.
And she was a phonetician and a conversation analyst as well. So.
All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very, very helpful input from her.
Okay, so last bit. If anyone who's listening is interested in, well, undergrads or postgraduate students who are interested in linguistics, and especially your field, conversational analysis, do you have any suggestions in terms of writing a proposal or looking for supervisors or in general?
Come to York. It's one of the things.
Oh, really?
Especially if you are interested on the linguistics side. I would absolutely recommend this program on language and communication because it gives you this interdisciplinary beauty.
Yes.
And that's one thing, but in terms of it's very hard to look for a phenomenon before having any data, really.
Exactly.
But you can have a sort of interest, whether it is natural data that you want to look at, whether you want to focus on prosody or nonverbal behavior, or all of it, or whether you want to look at more specific things like classroom interactions.
Yes.
And that would also... shape sort of like the way your program is going to be carried out, whether in linguistics and education or linguistics and sociology or psychology,
exactly.
So it's
and mathematics.
There's even like social work
everywhere.
As well.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Women's study, philosophy,
women's studies, all of it. Law. There's lots all of it.
Hmm.
So it's
even management, business.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean the way you deal. Even like with money, like physical objects, money, like handing money or handling it, the way you move it across a table, things like that. That's fascinating, actually.
That's called
the organized ways in which we do things. We're so predictable.
I know,
but
telltale signs.
Yeah, but it's. I don't know if it's still cultural when we actually do it everywhere. So. It's more like about being a human being and part of being human. It's
just, how are they going to find this very specific field or the topic that they're going to, they would like to work on? How did you find it? Well, it was through your master's program.
Yeah, I mean, but through my master's, I discovered just, you know, like sort of the interest in prosody and in detail of things that are very organized, and just I thought, yeah, I want to study like how this alignment is done, you know. But then the data gave me something else. The data gave me, oh yeah, the visual is much more important at this point. Or like, yeah, how do people actually get into these assessments? And so I'm looking like at non-lexical tokens as well.
Yeah.
So all these ums and ooh and things like that, and like how the facial expressions, I mean, how they go along with the talk, for example, and how they project the stance of the assessment.
So you just listed a lot of topics.
Yeah. So see, like, all of those things were given to me by my data. So it's essentially like
you get data. Exactly.
You get data, but you need to look for your main interest, whether it is some sort
humor,
or more than that, just the context in which you want to work. Mm. So
through reading.
Yeah, yeah.
Or but, just observing.
Yeah, but probably if you gain an interest in this, it's because you actually had some sort of encounter. Like in York here, like the undergrads do have courses.
Oh yeah.
Interactional linguistics and
it's very important you have the basic understanding of the theoretical framework and how,
because the learning is through data sessions. That's what we do. So you go to sessions and you analyze data, and that's what you do. You can read a lot, but
if you can't analyze the data, then you learn by doing. Yeah.
And there's no other way.
It's very hands-on.
It's very hands-on.
It's very different from our discipline. Our discipline is just arguments and arguments and arguments and kind of designing experiments and carrying out experiments.
I mean, here there's a whole theory behind it and you need to learn it. But when you encounter data that is not organized in the ways that, you know, you would think it is, you struggle and you think, okay, think, stop. Okay, this is doing this, this is doing that, this is responding to this, this is, he says this, then the other person says that, responsive to that. Okay, so you start using all that knowledge and applying it.
Yes.
But to that particular piece of data that you've only found now, that you've only been exposed to now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit like improvising, but, well, having the tools to actually do it. So it's a lot of hard work.
It's fascinating.
But you get to the point where you can actually do this and
have fun. I know, and explore.
Know.
Well, thank you very much.
No worries.
To come to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
If anybody who's interested in contacting you, how can they find your name?
It's Veronica Gonzalez Temer.
Uh-huh.
And
University of York. University of Leeds as well.
University of York and University of Leeds.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much for coming today.
We've certainly
enjoyed your talk, and best of luck with the future endeavors and your Viva as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, and good night. Thank you very much. Next up is URY Music and first is news.
And online.
This is the University of York's student radio station, URY.